You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
The journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
Now, I know that probably sounded off to you, but don't worry. It's as comfortable as an old sweater, because that is Philip Gilfus. That is the voice of Philip Gilfus and from Earl Grey. He's nice enough to co-host To The Journey with myself, because Char is, she has this thing called a life that kind of gets in the way. So, Philip, thank you so much for coming.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to be here. You know, we have the EMH program on the Enterprise E. So, even though I swore I'd never use one of these things, but so I just did a quick transfer over to the Voyager. So, it should be good. Just as long as you don't mind me wearing the blue uniform here.
No, blue is good. Blue is embraced here. Blue is not used enough. I have that same kind of sentimentality as one of your co-hosts.
Yes. We don't mention their names, though.
This is To The Journey. Yes. The less about the outside network, the better.
Exactly. This is Earl Grey Decaf Edition.
Well, what we were teasing, actually, you know what? I just want to start off by saying I apologize completely.
It's your
for the
fault,
lack
Tristan.
Of To The Journey. It is completely my fault. I take full responsibility for the lack of To The Journey last week. We apologize to the fans. We try not to do that, but sometimes you just got to take a bye. But we are back in style, and we are going to be doing a episode commentary. Now, you guys like episode commentaries. That's what we're getting. And now, Philip, why is this commentary special to you? Basically, the placement in the season.
Well, I mean, really, any episode that's a Kes episode is something I look forward to. And so, I mean, really, the best case scenario for me is an episode that features the time that Kes was on Voyager. So what other best case scenario is there but worst case scenario? Because this, and of course, this is the episode, right, we've all wanted, right? We wanted to see the Maquis, yes, and the Starfleet. And of course, season three, the end of season three was when that happened.
Yeah, we're doing a season 3 episode 25 worst case scenario. Now, sadly, it's not a Kes centric episode, but Kes is in it,
right? So therefore
therefore in Philip's mind, it's a Kes centric episode. But yes, I mean, this is the episode. This is where we get to see Starfleet and Maquis go head to head. Now, even though it's holographic and not real, we still get to see it. And I feel like this was I don't know if this was kind of like a kick in the pants to the fans or a wink to the audience. I'm not quite sure if it was a nudge, wink, or a full frontal assault, because, you know, Voyager fans and Star Trek fans in general were screaming for some sort of adversity, and we just kind of got a tease of it here.
And I'll be interested when we begin the episode, Tristan, whether you choose to do things the Starfleet way or the Maquis way.
Well, let's answer that question right now. Okay, so How we play it on To The Journey is we give a 3-2-1 hit play, and whether it's on Netflix, Hulu, your DVDs, or however else you get it, it's completely up to you. And we'll be talking through the episode, and we'll make it as entertaining as possible for people who are just listening in their cars or people who want to queue it up at home so you can watch along. So are you ready, Philip?
Do it.
Do it. All right, here we go. 3-2-1 play.
Oh, there's your lady.
Good start already. This is going to be a good episode.
Yeah, we already have V'Elanna with her buddy. I'm going to say Chuckles, is it?
Chuckles, is it? I never get tired of hearing Q make fun of the Voyager crew. I mean, I know some people don't like the Q episodes, but I positively love them.
Well, he always checks in, you know, and you can ignore the DS9 one if you want, but he always checks in and basically gives a commentary of, like, what's happened that whole season of, like, on the TNG verse, he'll be like, oh, so Riker still hasn't gotten that command, has he? Or, you know, with Janeway, you know, so Madam Captain. So it's always an interesting sort of meta-commentary.
Yeah.
But the Belana-Chakotay relationship has always been a good constant here with the two of them in the turbo lift here. I mean, it's sort of an anchor for each other. You know, for as little as Chakotay gets, at least you have that relationship.
Now, with the beginning of this episode, now, as an audience member, as a first-time audience member, we don't know yet what's going on. We just know that there's some sort of weird relationship or weird interaction going on between B'Elanna and Chakotay. They're not normally this shady. Now, they chose... I'm pretty sure that they chose B'Elanna for the reason of she has a gold uniform, she is a Maquis, and so them having a Maquis conversation would not raise any red flags. But if we saw Tom in a gold uniform, immediately we'd be in defensive mode. We're like, what's going on?
Yeah, and he's not smart enough to carry off the gold. Or, I mean, I didn't mean that. He's, I think it, and look, that's the teaser, too. It's like, there's going to be B'Elanna. There's going to be a mutiny. And then teaser.
Teaser, bam, mutiny.
We're all like, what? Because, I mean, here it's season three, especially the end of season three. Like, any vestiges of Maquis, like, I don't even remember, except for the fact that they have their, you know, affirmative action rank. I don't even think the fact of Maquis Starfleet anymore. I mean, the chestnut complaint, the conflict, like we said at the beginning, but even, like, by season two, I don't even think, you know, that bad about Maquis. You know, once Seska leaves, there's really no, like, really Maquis people still around, you know, any rebellious or chafing against the rules.
You know what? You're right. After Seska leaves. Well, I mean, what's that guy's name? But he was Starfleet, though, who betrayed them to Seska.
Oh, yeah. Well, he got ballooned up, so it was all right.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah, you're right. I mean, like, after Seska left, there really wasn't any more deceitful Maquis. But the thing is, I mean, I guess that's kind of where the lines blur between Maquis freedom fighter and Maquis terrorist. You know, like, how you view them definitely depends on that stance.
Well, I think, like, Tuvok, I think he was still trying to... He still had that bounty he was going to get collect if he got back to the Alpha Quadrant for... He never forgot what his mission was. But, you know, one thing I like about this episode, since we're still in the credits here, the Tuvok-Chakotay relationship, to me, is always interesting because Tuvok has never really accepted Chakotay. And maybe there's an episode where they kind of bury the hatchet, probably this one. But, like, to me, Tuvok has always been very prickly and very, like, anytime Chakotay gives an order, he kind of, like, looks to Janeway, like, is this legit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always wanted some sort of evolution of that. And we, Shar and I talked about that in the episode, like, our podcast episode, What If Janeway Died? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, we would have had a full frontal assault of Tuvok and Chakotay needing to bury the hatchet. Like, we would have, like, that would have been absolutely necessary to run the ship if Chakotay was captain and Tuvok was first officer. And as much as I love Janeway, and I still think we could have done that with Janeway, I want to see that. I want to see them bury the hatchet. I want to see them have a knockdown dragout and then an evolution of relationship. So not just a handshake saying, oh, I can work with you and you can work with me, blah, 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 and then never see it again. I want to see a growth. I want to see an evolution.
Yeah, because, like, this little speech that Tuvok's giving Chakotay right now, like, that's for real. Like, I don't even know if this is a fake scenario, because that totally could have happened in season one, where Tuvok's could have just telling, like, so, Chakotay, this is how you be a Starfleet officer, sir.
Now, the only thing that really tips us off that something is wrong is because B'Elanna's, first off, at the wrong station.
Yeah.
And if you look really close, depending on the size of your TV at the time when you were watching this live, is that her rank is wrong. She doesn't have the right rank.
Yeah, and everyone is being a little sketchy or throwing shade at Chakotay, which is very season one-y. He's like, even Kim's giving him a little lip, like, are you sure the captain say so? Is this like Simon Says, did Janeway say so, Chakotay? Are you the real first officer?
Yeah, like, are you sure you want to do that? Can you imagine, like, if that's how a starship ran? It's just like, okay, Ensign Kim, go check out the deuterium tanks. He's like, are you sure you want me to do that?
Is that a pinky command promise? Or, but yeah, no, this is definitely gearing up, knowing what's about to happen here. This is definitely cool.
Yeah. Like, at this time, like, people, yeah.
Chakotay, all hands, let's do it. He even steals Janeway's saying.
I know, I love that. It's like, let's do it. You know, it's just, I try to think of You know, like, what could have been a better code word? Like, just like, okay, Chakotay to all hands, boomerang. You
know, like... Right now I'm trying to think. Broken arrow. Broken arrow.
Broken arrow. Like, I don't know what's scarier. Is that, like, that a broken arrow happened or you have a word for it? Okay, so B'Elanna shot Kim, which I'm sure was some sort of latent hostility carrying over from Caretaker.
Well, no, it's weird. You know, people don't often talk about it, but Kim Torres, or Korez, I think had the possibility. Like, they never were serious, but they planted that. Like, in Caretaker, like, the whole Starfleet Maquis. And, like, we always wanted to say, like, it was brother-sister, but, like, there were some times in season one in that mess hall where it's like, Seska and B'Elanna are having their gossip session, and Seska's like, what about Kim? And B'Elanna's like, hey, Hera, you dating anyone? You know, and so I like, it was always like played for laughs, but that could have been a thing. There was an alternate scenario.
I don't know about that one. That sounds a lot like Philip headcanon to me. That
why are you so invested? Oh, anyway. Yeah. So B'Elanna has chosen to be a Maquis. So, if you choose to be a Maquis, turn to page 67.
Okay, I rolled a 7. What does that do?
Well, apparently you're now getting shot at in the quarters. Yeah. Well, you there. Oh, wow. It's Seska wearing weird hair.
Now we really know. Okay, so we're like, is this a flashback? Is this a temporal disturbance? Did B'Elanna hit her head and we're seeing her hallucination? You know, now, we don't know yet.
Now, I'm trying to remember, because it has been a while. Because I know they changed colors for Seska. What did she wore blue and then gold, or gold and then blue? And I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure she was blue first.
Yeah.
And then went to gold.
Right.
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. And fans, if I'm wrong, let me know.
Yeah, that's right. She used to be hanging around like the science station, and then she ended up in engineering. But yeah, I don't know why her hair's down. That's never been a Seska style, but we'll go with it, sure.
Well, you know, it was probably Tuvok, you know, when he was crafting the program. He's like, you know what? I've always wanted to see Seska with her hair down.
It kind of reminds me, you know, not to pull this card, but in Unification, when Picard complains that Data got Riker's hair wrong in his during the Spock episode. So I guess maybe, you know, smart people just can't always get the hairdo down.
Can't always get the hairdo right. Vulcan and like Data, you know, like very logical people can't get the aesthetics right. Kind of like Odo and faces, you know.
That's right. There you go. It's their kryptonite.
All right. So now I really want to know, there was a couple of options that you could have done. And they discussed this later on in the episode. Like, you could have agreed to be with Chakotay from the beginning. You could agree to be with Chakotay, but then fight for Janeway secretly. You could refuse to be with Chakotay and be with Janeway's crew, but then end up in the brig. What would you do? What's your scenario?
Let's see. Oh, it's Kess. Hold on. Oh, wait. I'm paying attention now.
Hold on.
Shh. Yeah. though it's interesting, as an aside, not to deflect your question, but like at this point in the season, she actually has the long locks. Not to be superficial. But anyway, so that it was interesting that this is the season she actually got out of the Wig of Steel. I don't know what your Kess name is for that. But anyway.
Wig of Steel.
Yeah. But I don't know. Because obviously my reflex would always be to go Starfleet. So I probably would have been like, was it Paris who first did it? Well, I know we'll find out in a second. That was like the most boring option. You just get stuck the whole time and like sitting in the brig. So I don't know. Maybe I would have played along with Starfleet and then pretended then to join the Maquis just to make things happen. I was just fooling.
Yes. See, that's the thing. That's the thing is that I choose Starfleet all the way, every single time.
Always choose Starfleet.
That's me. But the thing is, though, that's boring because you'd get thrown in the brig, you know? So I think what I would do is I would agree to be with the Maquis and then fight for Janeway secretly. Just like you said, to keep things going.
So is this sort of like a commentary like, yeah, choose Starfleet, that's boring, like Star Trek is. Am I right, everyone?
Am I right, folks? Chakotay just looks at the camera. does like a face like Jim in The Office. Like,
and then he has like a one-on-one interview later. So I wanted to take
I
over
want
to the
see
ship
that so bad.
What pranks is he pulling on Janeway, Tristan? Why is my coffee mug inside of a Jell-O?
Ah, that's the one I was gonna go with.
Oh,
I was gonna go with tricorder in the Jell-O. Personally, yeah. I think the coffee mug and Jell-O is a little crass, but whatever, it's cool. Mm.
Oh, and Tom walking in, because as always, no one's invented the privacy kiosk yet for the holodeck.
See, okay, all right. That's the thing, is that this needs to be a much bigger deal, because when people just walking in your holodeck program, you don't know what B'Elanna's doing. She could be doing some very private stuff.
She could be a Vulcan working their pawn far out.
Could be. And here's the thing, is that I really liked in Our Man Bashir in Deep Space Nine about how Bashir was super pissed when Garrick came into his program, because he caught him in a compromising situation. Like, he was kissing a holographic lady. Mm-hmm. And he says, he's like, not only is walking in on someone's holographic program rude, it's illegal. I like that he said that. It's illegal. Like, you could get prosecuted for that.
Right.
But Paris doesn't care.
No, Tom. But this is interesting, because their relationship, this is sort of, I would say, like, I don't know if they're officially dating at this point. I mean, they haven't had, like, the I love you yet in space moment. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like that pre-dating relationship where I guess they're just hanging out a lot more right here.
The flirtation, the proximity flirtation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they have a standard Friday night mess hall dinner without knowing that it's standard Friday night mess dinner. Yeah. Are you doing anything else? No. Yeah.
How about we meet up at this time? You know, whatever. If you're there, cool. If not, whatever.
If not, yeah.
Gee, I wonder if there's a green screen going on right
now. No, that looks completely legitimate, Tristan. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, of course, you know, B'Elanna should know better. Never show hollow novels to Paris. You know they're gonna get Parised up, and
Parised up, parodied.
There he is, Tom in a yellow shirt.
Oh,
what all the fans
that just
wanted.
Looks wrong.
It does on so many levels.
This looks just absolutely weird.
Though it is Ensign Paris, so if y'all wanna, you know. Make your own story.
It's like Picard in blue, wouldn't you say? Like, that's how awkward it is.
Paris in yellow. Yeah, it doesn't work.
No, I don't think that works. I mean, Char would dig that, but I don't think that works.
No, that's true. Yeah, y'all need to do the what all the characters would have been like if they had been other colors.
I photoshopped Janeway in blue one time.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, it makes sense. She's a scientist. That's how she started.
For those of,
makes sense.
Those of us who haven't read Pathways or Mosaic, you'll just...
and those of you who haven't, why are you even listening to the show?
It's on the book queue, okay? But yeah, this is Paris. So what's Paris choose? I have to remember here. Let's see, because B'Elanna instantly chose Maquis. So Paris... Mm-hmm. Oh, I think... I guess he pretends to be with Chakotay and then goes Starfleet?
I think he...
Yeah, because Paris is too needy here. Never be too needy.
Yeah, he pretends to be Maquis at the beginning. In this conversation, I think he pretends to be Maquis. But then when the moment says, when he's like, all right, let's do it, boomerang, he says, he jumps up and goes, like, get down. And so he switches to Starfleet. Mm-hmm. But then when
Chakotay
comes back and says, like, hey, yeah, he says he's bored. He's like, he comes back. He's like, hey, you have a second chance. He's like, okay, I'll go Maquis again. So B'Elanna's Maquis all the way.
Yeah, which not to skip ahead. I love the montage of all the characters, but yeah, to me, because the character you play, like, well, let's talk about the concept of a holo novel, because I mean that's something that we get maybe a little in DS9, not as other like for Voyager, it's this, and then like not until maybe author, right? But like that whole concept, and then like Dixon Hill in TNG, but like that's sort of an interesting concept of having that immersive character experience. I mean, you know, it's no Beowulf program, I'll admit, but you know.
Yeah. That's a high bar for us all.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, that would be a cool thing. Though, I don't know. I can still see, even though it's because of other reasons outside of Star Trek world, but why you would still have the books to go back to, you know, for entertainment as well as the immersive experience.
Well, I think they tried to show us that books aren't going to go anywhere. I mean, like, books have survived radio. They've survived TV. They survived film. I think... No matter what kind of new visual form of entertainment we're going to have, we'll go back to novels, we'll go back to books, because there's something human about it, there's something basic about it, and it's the, you know, it's the written word. I can't even articulate how beautiful the written word is. I mean, like, one of the first things that we do when we grow up and after we're born is we learn how to read, because it helps us communicate. And I don't think any visual medium will be able to replace that.
Right. And because, I mean, I think if you go into Hollow Novels, that's the reason used bookstores close. And so don't do that. And then how else will Janeway from 1159 meet that guy?
That's true. That's true. And then we'll never get, you know, we'll never get Catherine Janeway.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Boom. Yeah. So folks, if you don't buy books, you just stop Voyager from happening.
Now, I know the answer is, oh wait, here we go. Boomerang.
Boomerang.
See, like, yeah.
Get down, Tuvok.
Then he gets phasered anyway.
Oh, wait. Isn't this the infamous gag reel where Tuvok does, like, that death scene for, like, 30 seconds?
Yeah, he just, like, he starts bouncing around his cubicle. Now, okay. Now, when I ask people this question, like, mm-hmm. we talk about Hollow Novels a lot because we get a lot of Hollow Novels on Voyager, but, you know, whenever you ask a Star Trek fan, like, oh, hey, you know, what Hollow Novel, what holodeck program would you run? I mean, obviously the answer is, I'd want to be in Star Trek. Like, I'd want to live their lives. Right. And I feel like that's the most common answer. Besides Star Trek, what Hollow Novel would you like to run? Like, what situation, what scenario, what book, what show, what would you like to be a part of?
Well, I mean, to me, being a history nerd, I could think of two scenarios. Because the time period, like a lot, for a lot of these characters, it's this time period. I was going to say my favorite time period of early America, Constitution, and Revolutionary War. But I think if you want something engaging and something that'd be a cool role, I'm going to go for my second favorite, and that's going to be ancient Rome, where you could be either Julius Caesar or play, you know, Augustus Caesar, either one of those. And there's either of those two stories. So either you could play Mark Antony or Cleopatra or either of the Caesars and just have to go through that, or Pompey. Or any of those folks, and you have to play those roles and, you know, how that works out. Kind of like reminds me of, like, the O'Brien, Bashir scenarios where they're kind of playing those.
Nice. Yeah. Now, would you be able to shower in ancient Rome? Like, would you tweak that?
Well, they have nice baths. It's cool. Okay. Yeah, you know.
All right.
I'm sure the wine's good. And it depends if you go with these are the Voyages Enterprise model of wearing your holographic clothing, or whether you bring your own and look very interesting as you walk down the deck in your...
Yeah, see, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I've always wondered about that. I was like, why couldn't you just, like, why don't they just have a changing station in the holodeck? I mean, like, what? Like, I personally, I don't want people to know my business, so, like, I would not want to wear, you know, my toga. Like, if I was going to ancient Rome, I wouldn't want to wear my toga down the hallway, say, like, yes, I'm Caesar today.
There's Tristan going to his baths program again.
Exactly. It's like, why is he wearing the toga? Now, is he going to a frat party, or is he being Julius Caesar? Either way, it's weird.
Don't you know Tristan's fascination with late 20th century university social groups?
That's totally how it would be phrased, too. I love that. He's like, yeah, then he phasered me and the program reset. I love how Neelix just resides to that fact. He's just like, yeah, I got phasered and it's fine.
And I love the gossip train on Voyager. Like, nothing stays secret for long here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I mean, what did they say? Like, gossip flies at warp speed on a ship this small or something like that?
And then, hey, guys. Oh, it's Harry, guys. No, we love you, Harry.
Ayala, I think that's the first time I've ever seen Ayala spelled out.
Which, by the way, and this is nothing, this is me being random, but I was just watching Before and After and just had, like, a fangasm from everyone getting promoted. You know, if people haven't seen that and always complain about it, you know, because when I saw These Are the Voyages Enterprise, and 10 years later, if folks remember, that's when the These Are the Voyages takes place, no one gets promoted. So guess what? Harry is not the worst person in Starfleet, because Travis and Yoshi still are ensigns after
true.
14 years on the NX-01. So, you know what? 7 years doesn't look so bad now, does it?
That's true. I had never really thought of that before, but you're absolutely right. Not even Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Yep. So we got everyone in the Maquis clothes and two Parises?
Yeah, it's the same Maquis clothes that they had in Caretaker. It is the same exact clothes. I mean, it's so funny because Tuvok, Tuvok, he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's like, it doesn't matter what they're wearing. He's like, he probably just went, he's like, eh, and they're back in their Maquis clothes. They're like, well, do they have more than one set? Nah, they just got the one.
That's because Tuvok never recognizes them wearing their Starfleet uniforms. You're only a Maquis to me. That's how Tuvok talks. So.
Talks like Batman.
All right, Chakotay. Where were the other delirium crystals?
Well, you know, now that you're saying it, I have never seen Tuvok and Batman in the same room. So
that's true. We need to mention that. I mean, like, his ears probably go right up into the helmet.
So here's the question. Who would be Tuvok's Robin? It can't be Kim. Well, that's, it can't be everyone's Robin. Is that...
Sorry, Garrett Wong.
Maybe it's Naomi. You don't know.
Ooh, that's even cooler. Like, oh yeah, we could do a harken back to Frank Miller's Batman in The Dark Knight Returns, where it's a young girl.
Oh,
where
yeah,
Robin's
yeah.
a young
yeah,
girl.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I like that. Yeah, two. Okay, all right. Artists out there, and I'm talking to you, Geek Filter, Aaron Harvey. Okay, we want Tuvok as Batman and Naomi as Robin.
Okay, so this is cool. We thought we blew up Janeway, but we didn't. She beamed on over to take over the ship. All right, that means the top's coming off, the heat's going up, and she's taking charge. I mean, that's how you take over a ship, right? That's what Voyager taught me.
You had that in your holster, ready to go.
Yes.
Man. That was a. So no one's guarding the door.
That
really bothers me.
It does. Oh, Paris versus Paris. Who's gonna win?
Now, this is the existential crisis that I think we've all been through.
You either got to fight him or in the program, right? Those are the two options.
In the program?
Yeah.
Or kiss him. I mean, either one. I mean...
Well, I was going to say there was the other word.
Yeah. Now, this could be... There's nothing more iconic than the TNG holodeck grid program.
Mm-hmm.
But there's... I really, really like the crisscross pattern of metallic rods for Voyager. I think that's probably my favorite holodeck representation.
I can see, I don't think we see it that often, so it is kind of refreshing to see, because I guess you have the holo suite, because I was watching them do some DS9 too, because I'm also doing the DS9 rewatch, and it looks like a little, like, and also because it's Quark and it's Cardassian, where it's a little bit looser with the wires, so.
Yeah. Also looks like a bunker, you know, like it, like they're...
So, like, is this holo novel kind of like, like the to Go Set a Watchman? Is this like the To Kill a Mockingbird sequel where, like, we only found half of it, but we're just gonna go ahead and publish it and it'll be good?
Yeah, we're not quite sure if the author really wanted to publish it, but we're gonna play with it anyway because we think it would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I like this, yeah.
But you know,
Go Set a Watchman, but it would be what? Go Set an Insurrection? Go Set a Voyager?
Right. So, and if one of my co-hosts were here, I'd ask him if Insurrection Alpha was Star Trek Insurrection, would that have made him happy? Because he hates that movie. Okay. I also love the holodeck programs come up during briefing meetings, because usually that only happens on the Enterprise, but I'm glad to see Voyager does it too.
47. The program was accessed 47 times.
Tuvok playing it cool. I was like, do we have any other things to talk about except holodeck programs? Nope.
It must be a slow week on Voyager ship.
This must be a routine trek going on here, Tristan.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, man, I feel bad because I have not gone. I have not posted anything on routine check for like a week or so.
Well, you know, that's got to be something with Voyager because it is a small ship. You know, and it's not a lot of recreation. You know, it's not like the flagship where it has like a million recreation facilities, like your own fencing person or... you know, phaser dots or, you know, whatever. You know, it's basically the holodeck. I don't think there's – and, well, you know, that's pretty much it. I don't know any other recreation rooms they have. The newness has got to be something that really does take hold of the Voyager crew when you're out here in the Delta Quadrant.
I like that. I like that idea. I think you hit it on the head there, the newness of it. I mean, they encounter new things all the time, like out in space and new species and everything like that. But – new within those walls, new within the ship, that I'm sure that very rarely happens besides like a new opus by Kim and the Kim Tones.
Right. It always hits the charts because there's nothing else on the charts. So but yes, Tuvok reveals his authorship, which I think, you know, they'll get into. I mean, what does that say about Tuvok? I think he does maybe apologize for to Chakotay, but it is interesting.
Yeah, I'm like that Chakotay is lighthearted about this, where I like that he says, like, he doesn't take it personally. He doesn't think, like, oh, the Vulcan's just trying to take the piss out of it again. You know, like, he's not He's not just trying to rib him.
That has to be the quote of this episode. Mr. Tuvok, loosen up.
This is like season three, like the end of season three. This is like hardcore Kate Mulgrew Janeway voice. Like this is when she almost sounds like she's putting on a voice.
The Hepburn.
It's like it's just some harmless fun.
Yeah, you know, and there's a complaint, whether folks know it or not. You know, of course, there's a real reason why public domain's the answer. But like in the 24th century, we never see 24th century works. We always see, for some reason, things from the 20th century and before. Like, you know, are there no original works anymore? And so here we get Insurrection Alpha. She's like, hey, it's something new that we created here in the Delta Quadrant, which I think, you know, and this may be thinking about it too hard, but like in Voyager, there's always these things that we've created here in the Delta Quadrant, whether it's the first baby in the Delta Quadrant or the first shuttle we built here in the Delta Quadrant with the Delta Flyer or, you know, whatever, or the first thing we wrote here. So, I mean, there's sort of that culture they're creating, the Delta Quadrant culture, even though it is Federation and Maquis.
I like that. Yeah, it's true because they're the first humans out there and that they know of. And everything they do is the first. Like they could say anything that they want. Like, oh, this is the first painting ever done in the by a human in the Delta Quadrant. This is the first Leola root stew that Neelix has made on a Federation starship. This is the first time a human's gone to the bathroom in the Delta Quadrant. You know, like it's
there's a plaque those. For everything now.
Yeah. Everybody gets a ribbon. Yeah, true. You know, everyone gets a participation trophy.
Now, though I do have to say, in this scenario right now, with Tuvok being assigned to Paris, I feel Tuvok's pain as a writer. My joy of collaboration goes very downhill quickly. I'm like, this is what I wrote. I don't need you helping me.
Yeah. See, I feel like to go back to our literary references, this is probably like the Stieg Larsson situation, where you have the girl with the dragon tattoo, Millennium Trilogy, now going to be a quadrilogy, but with a different author. Like, just imagine Stieg Larsson as Tuvok. Like, listen, you know, these are, you know, I wrote this. These are my characters. How about you just leave it alone? And he's like, no, I think it would be cool if I did this.
Oh, great. And now they're doing the wiki approach of everyone submitting their ideas. The wiki holodeck. A romance. Yes.
The wiki deck.
Yes. Oh, goodness. And I love, like, to me, this is a, I know we'll get into the danger here as it comes up, but, like, let me look, where are we at the time mark? You know, we're almost a little halfway through, and there's really no conflict. Like, this has been sort of a fun romp, which is fine, I'm not complaining, like, there's no aliens of the week, there's no one, you know, whatever, it's just life on Voyager, which I think it's good and fun to have those sort of episodes every now and then, you know, not all the time, because it would be boring, I mean, in any of the Star Trek series, but sometimes you just see, what is a day in the life like here? You know, the stuff they have to deal with. Because it does build those character moments out.
I completely and utterly agree, because I love those episodes. Those are some of my favorite episodes in Star Trek, is when we just get to see daily life. We get to just get to see them go through their normal day, or like a normal situation where an alien's not trying to blow up the ship, or, you know, like they're, you know, like somebody's not trying to harvest their organs, you know, like in TNG, one of the greatest episodes of all time was Data's Day, my opinion. I love that episode, and no one's getting killed, no one's getting kidnapped, and there's no species on the brink of extinction. Now, granted, we get our drama later on in this episode, but it's we see this happening and there is no conflict, but yet we're entertained.
Now, what's your, because, you know, we didn't mention, but I'm sure folks know, you know, when this episode started after the credits, you see Martha Hackett and, of course, you see Seska. So do you think this is a good Seska return? Because isn't this, well, no, I guess this isn't her last appearance, because you have that one near the end. But
in Shattered.
Yeah, but this is basically one of her last appearances. Did you think it did her well? Did you enjoy her being the Yar of Voyager, constantly being brought back, part of the family?
Yeah, I think this was a great idea on how to bring somebody back. I mean, this was, now granted, we had Shattered, and which I thought was a great, you know, Seska romp, as you would put it. But I feel like this one was, like, if they ended it here, it would have been fine, because I thought this was a great send-off. Seska's dead, but yet she is still the bane of the Voyager crew, and she, you know, like, she has a one last chance to get one last dig, you know, and I like that. I like that. From beyond the grave.
That's right. the ghost of Voyager.
Yeah.
Ah, the Paris and Tuvok co-authorship.
Now, whose name goes first? Obviously, Tuvok, and whatever the hell his last name is.
You couldn't pronounce it. Oh, no, don't change the title. Insurrection Alpha is awesome.
That is actually a pretty good title. I mean, it's now it's like no, you know, like in the throes of, you know, of mutiny, you know, like it's nothing romantic like that, but it's stern and to the point.
That's right. It's no, great. I'm trying to remember the Doctor's author program. But...
Oh, Photons Be Free.
Yes, it's No Photons Be Free as a title.
It's No Photons Be Free. That's right.
All right. So now we're about a little over halfway through and we get the real story. Seska's back. In her odd hair choice. But nevertheless, I'm beyond that, folks. I'm beyond that now.
I don't think you are. I think you're lying to us. But no, I did seriously like this because I thought whoever thought of this, you know, whoever wrote this episode, I can't remember who wrote it, but did a great job of, like, pitching this because I wonder what came first. Like,
Martha Hackett's available.
yeah. Martha Hackett's available. So how can we get her back on the ship? Or did they write this? And like maybe it was like a fanboy article where they're just like, okay, and then like they meet up and they have this holodeck and it's really written by Tuvok and it's really cool and everybody has a good time and they're like, okay, where's the conflict? Where's the drama? They're like, we don't need it. And they're like, yes, we do. Throw in Martha Hackett.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know if Martha was like Denise Crosby where she just sat outside the studio and like every day when the executives and the writers and actors would drive and be like, hey guys, I have an idea for a script.
Yeah, like no, it's cool. Like I'm not doing anything this weekend.
But yeah, and I can't, obviously I am biased in this statement about to say, but this does remind me of like the ultimate RPG scenario here. You know, like your character is on the holodeck reprogramming it. Suddenly, you can't communicate and you're locked in and now you must have to make choices. So, this is the ultimate RPG.
Oh crap, there's a door.
Yeah.
Turn left twice.
Well, there they go.
I love this half-assed run that they do in Star Trek. No one.
This is the Doctor Who moment of Voyager.
No one just does a full-out sprint in Star Trek. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you know, like the ship could be on the brink of exploding. You know, debris is falling down on their head. Red alert is going on, and they'll just do that quick little jog. Like, it's never like no one ever rushes to the bridge. Like, and also, oh, speaking of holodecks, you're in the holodeck, like, Janeway's in her, you know, like, her Victorian outfit, and it's like, red alert, Captain Janeway to the bridge! And then she takes the time to change and get to the bridge. That's one thing I really appreciated about Generations.
Oh, that's right, I think Brent Spiner said he felt like Liberace sitting in that uniform at the off station, but...
Your purse is on fire.
Of course, there was does Janeway get killed here? Yeah. Hollow Janeway, sorry, in case people can't see what
Hollow
we're doing.
Hollow Janeway.
There she is.
That's one thing that always bugs me about Memory Alpha. Like, you go on Memory Alpha to check out some details about the episode, or you look about the character, and it's like, oh, how many times have they died? Or, no, it's like, how many appearances has Janeway made in, you know, like, different types of Janeway? Like, young Janeway, you know, you would see, like, we'd see a young Janeway, we'd see a current Janeway, and then, we'd see a holographic Janeway. And, like, holographic Janeway died. And it's just like, does that really count as an appearance? Like, does that really count as a death? It's a hologram.
And, of course, since this is really now Seska's program, Chakotay is all over her. We get it, Seska.
I love that. He's like, yeah, Chakotay's attracted to you. None of it's real.
That's how we
know. Like, neither is she, but he's still trying to insult her.
Aw, the safeties are off, guys. The safeties are off.
See, now, I never really quite understood this because holographic Seska is not real. She's holographic, obviously. But yet she just continues to toy with him. What's the point of toying with him? Like, if you wanted to destroy the ship or wreak havoc to the ship, why not just do it?
So is the Doctor not real, Tristan, because he's a hologram? Look, your holographism has been annoying me this whole time.
My holographism. I like that.
So now is that the real Doctor or is that the holographic Doctor? Or
is that is the fake holographic Doctor.
And, oh man, this is... All right. Yeah, one thing... Tuvok being the security officer, he doesn't necessarily, not that it's necessary, kick as much butt as you would think a security officer would do.
Yeah, you'd think that they'd give him more opportunities to kind of show off his skills because he is trained in the martial arts and we have seen him do some pretty wicked cool moves, but they don't really have him show him off that well.
Yeah. You know what would be really cool? Oh, no, Tristan, I just figured it out and I can't believe I didn't do it before. Of course, who's Tuvok's Robin? Neelix. Of course.
No, I see Neelix as Tuvok's Riddler. Don't ask me why.
Or is he more, all right, kids, get ready to give me points. Or is he more Tuvok's Nightwing?
Maybe that's how we'll go, is that Neelix is Tuvok's Nightwing and Naomi is his Robin. Let's go with that.
Because one thing, and I know this is random, sorry. I love the Neelix in yellow. I mean, it's Year of Hell, even before and after. I love the concept of, like, what if Neelix is one of Tuvok's security people? That, to me, is cool and awesome. Okay, so yes. So Seska did it before she left. A month. The conspiracy was there the whole time.
Whenever I look at B'Elanna, it always...
Does she get, like, slightly out of focus, and then you hear this music?
It gets kind of blurry, yeah. Kind of soft focus, and slow motion. Just always slow motion. But no, like, there's certain times, like, I have to remind myself that her eyebrows aren't real.
Oh, yes.
And then when I realize that, it freaks me out, because I'm like, wait, her eyebrows aren't real. Like, how does she articulate? Like, how does she look, confused or, like, inquisitive, you know?
Now, this, in a way, this almost reminds me with Janeway's plotting. It also reminds me, and I'm liking on the episode name, of when she defeats Fear. So she's sort of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What is that episode? The clown one. Char loves that episode. I can't stand it.
We love it. We love it.
It's always green. Have you know, the fire is always green in Star Trek.
Well, maybe Green Lantern is attacking. You don't know.
It could be. Could be. With the power of will.
That's right. I mean, isn't Star Trek usually in the DC universe? So...
Have you read any of those comics? Like, have you read the Star Trek Green Lantern crossover?
Oh, no, I haven't. I have not.
Yeah, neither have I. It's too weird for me, okay? Yeah. I can believe the Planet of the Apes Star Trek crossover before I can believe the Green Lantern Star Trek crossover.
Well, it makes sense, because that was Earth!
Damn you all to hell! You blew it up!
Sorry, any excuse I can to bring out my Charlton Heston.
Yeah, we will take that impersonation from your dead cold hands. So yeah, the Paris Tuvok buddy cop scenario is what we're getting here.
I'd watch that movie.
Mm-hmm. Paris doesn't play by the rules. They give him by the book, Tuvok.
Tuvok is 5 days from retirement.
You're off the case, Paris.
He's in the triple digits and too old for this ship.
Turn in your comm badge, Paris. You're off the case.
You blew up 20 shuttles!
Oh, okay. Oh. They get some help from above. We get sort of the ship in a bottle kind of here, the holodeck within a holodeck here.
Yeah. With a little Deus Ex Machina.
Oh, and they're watching TV. We're watching.
I love that. Like, so they can tap in, and they got the same angle as the camera. That's crazy.
That's like, and I like Insurrection Alpha is not only a holo novel, it's also the TV show. So it's a multiple platform creative content. I like that. You got to do that.
Now, how creepy to know that they can do that. Oh, yeah. You know, it's kind of like knowing, like, if you have an Xbox Kinect, the camera's always on. You know, like, who's watching? Bill Gates is.
Start putting tape over my webcam here.
Yeah, it's that's the thing, is that one thing that always kind of, you know, has fascinated me with holo novels is the array of responses. Like, you can say whatever you want to Chakotay and he would have a response for it, because they would write those responses. It's kind of like a BioWare game, you know, where, like, there's a limited number of responses, but, like, you could say, like, monkey punch, and he would go, okay, I don't know why you're saying monkey punch, but so the computer can extrapolate what he would say. I think the powers of the computer is always fascinating me, because it's always just like, tell us, like, you can just tell the computer, tell us what this would look like in 50 years if they, you know, like, ran through a snowstorm and only had one shoe on, you know, like, you could add all these variables and the computer would build it. And so I have these fantasies where I'm like, computer, tell me what Firefly season 2 would have looked like. Go.
That reminds me of a meme I saw today, which this is just for humor, folks, not trying to get political, but it was sort of like a picture of Bernie Sanders, and it's like, vote Sanders, season 2 of Firefly.
If he promises season 2 of Firefly, I probably
would
vote for him.
Oh, there we go, watching it on TV here. I don't believe it's Seska shot.
The last April Fool's joke. Mm-hmm. Last April Fool's, someone sent me a post, like it was an article, and it said Netflix green lights season 2 of Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely forgot it was April Fool's. I freaking hate April Fool's. Yeah. I literally fell out of my chair. Now, when people say they fell out of their chair, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, I was laughing so hard I fell out of my chair. They didn't really fall out of their chair. I fell out of my chair. Because I was so taken aback at the possibility of Firefly season 2.
Well, I saw what's her name, Jewel, who plays the engineer. I'm blanking on the name.
Kaylee.
Yeah,
Julie
plays
State.
Kaylee. Yeah, she was a little bit peed off. She's like, Netflix, thanks for ruining my life. Everyone is now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh yes.
So Paris and Tuvok play the game better.
It, you know, in a little way, this reminds me of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. It's like, well, I'll go back in time and put the key over here. Well, I'll go back in time and get another key in a cage. Well, I'll go back.
I just got to remember.
Yeah, if Station shows up here, I'm going to be...
Now, this is probably, like, speaking of hairstyles, this is probably my favorite Paris hairstyle. I didn't like the shortcut season 6 look.
Oh, you mean the fact that he still has it? Oh, no, I get it. I get what you mean. No, yeah. Hey, I can say
burned.
That. I can say that. That's my word, or whatever you say that.
That's your what?
That's my word, because, yeah, I am also follically challenged.
Like, it's okay.
Yeah, guys.
My president is black, so it's fine. I can say things like this.
Tuvok, I'll kill everyone. I'm just crazy enough to do it. See, Paris has rubbed off on Tuvok. That's mm-hmm. how all buddy comedies end.
It's kind of like in, not Insurrection Alpha, but the real Insurrection, where mm-hmm. like Riker's like sets a collision course, and he's like, he wouldn't. And they look at Worf, yes, he would.
And then in Nemesis, we actually crash him.
And then, yeah, he bluffs it in Insurrection, then makes it happen in Nemesis.
Oh, goodness. Everyone, go to your death. Now, actually, I think this is how you pass the bridge officer test, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either kill Geordi or kill Seska.
Yeah,
it's
true.
One of the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, whatever it takes to get that third pip.
Okay. That's one thing that I never really quite understood is that you can. How many times did Troy take the test? Like 7 times or something
right.
like that? And then, like, Will's like, well, you only got 3 more, so, like, name one profession where you can take the test 10 times.
It helps if you've slept with the guy grading you. That's all I'm saying.
Oh. Nah, it was, I mean, that would be, like, probably, like, you know, half the women on the ship, then.
Well,
according to pop culture, I hate that myth, but whatever.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was only the main female cast members.
Here's to stories with happy endings. I had nothing to do with the food.
I like how everyone else not at the main table knows their place. No, I don't get invited to the big table.
I know, right? Yeah, they look so sad in the back, like they're at the kiddie table. Like, oh, is this by invitation only? Or like this, is this only the people who get the most lines this episode? Whatever, it's cool.
They just get served water and, you know, Leola soup.
Leola root stew and water.
All right, is this going to be a TOS laughter frozen shot at the end here?
Oh, I hope so. Those were my favorite. Like Kirk just like randomly like hit Spock on the leg like.
Dun 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 dun. And there it is.
Big green alien for no reason.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was worst case scenario.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Worst Case Scenario, Season 3, Episode 25. We hope you enjoyed it. We thank you so much for subscribing, downloading, liking, go to our Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm. If you go to trek.fm/contact, you can hit the drop-down menu, select To the Journey, and from there you can email us show ideas. What episode would you like us to do a commentary on next? Or do you have your own original idea? We want to hear from you. And you can also message us on Twitter. You can find me at The Insane Robin. Now, Philip, where can we find you?
You can find me at NC Public Servant. That's NC for North Carolina.
Now, before we get going, we need to let you know about some other things that have been happening on the network. Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Well, it's very small and intimate, and you get to see, you know, a lot of people whose work you've come to admire or whatever, and, I mean, that's what's kind of cool about it. The fact that it's in a hotel, it's at the Rio, and, you know, everyone is staying there.
Earl Grey.
Yeah, really, she's following the Hasbrat, I think, is really what it is.
Come for the revolution, stay for the Hasbrat.
It's got to be fresh Hasbrat. None of that replicated stuff.
Like, Daniel's like, at the watching the end of this episode, like, tears are coming down the face. It's like, oh, it's the Hasbrat. It's so spicy. It's what it is.
The Orb.
Also, the original title of this episode was A Matter of Breeding, which, when we talk about things feeling TNG-ish, that could have been a Riker episode.
The Ready Room.
It's about people and feelings and emotions. It's about philosophy. It's about the future. It's about hope. It's about glory. It's about intellectual promise. That's what Axanar is about. It is not a story about pew pew pew. I promise you that.
To the Journey. I do have one honorable mention.
Name it.
Pax.
Oh, how could we not have a top five season five moments without Prax?
Warp 5.
It kind of like is akin to when fans saw the Galaxy class in The Next Generation for the very first time, and you had basically a crew and civilian complement of, what, over 1,000 people? About two-thirds of that complement were civilians and their families. So you actually did have teachers and scholars and scientists and their extended families on board.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
One of the things that amazes me about the score for Star Trek The Motion Picture is that he only had 50% of the movie available to him when he scored. So he was scoring an awful lot to scene missing, scene missing.
The 602 Club.
Where did he get the cloak from on the other planet? I really, really, really want to know. He shows up with the cloak.
He kind of fashioned it out of a rudimentary lathe.
Literary Treks.
It's a small point, but I thought it was really interesting to have here in the book because, again, that's what Star Trek Deep Space Nine has really always done for Star Trek, which is kind of make faith okay in the Star Trek universe and show how it's valid. And so I thought that was a really nice, and it, again, it's a tiny point in the book, but I thought it was pretty powerful, at least for me, who is somebody who is of faith. So
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that, but it doesn't allow you to push the
women
narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Keiko could totally beat the crap out of Rumpelstiltskin. This is so, like, I cannot buy this at all. That she's just sitting there being like, oh, my baby.
At the very least, she could throw a plant at him or something. Because we established in TNG that pot foo is a thing.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm. One way that you can help us here at Trek.fm is to become a Trek.fm patron on Patreon. You can help us by keeping the Star Trek talk coming every week. From there, if you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you can give to help us with our bandwidth, with website cost, whatever it is, and you can give whatever amount you want to, and it really helps us out because we have so many shows to give you, and we give them to you for free, so we really would appreciate any help, but you don't have to. Before we go, we'd like to thank our associate producers, Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, and Aaron Harvey, and you can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. Next week, we have nothing planned. We have absolutely nothing planned. We're going to do some jazz, okay? A little soft shoe. We're just going to open up our brains to the Hollow Novel verse and just let the creativity fall in, much like the Doctor did in Author.
That's right. And I mean, I always feel like the burden that you and Char carry of doing this podcast, I feel the weight of it.
Nice. Well, I think that's a great ending note. So please tune in next week. It's going to be a surprise on what we're going to do and who we're going to have. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!